History at hand, revision at your fingertips. Welcome to this GCSE podcast, which is looking at the arms race and the development of pacts at the start of the Cold War up to 1955. We'll be having a look at how the United States were able to take a lead in nuclear technology, but how the Russians were rapidly catching up, and to many Americans, the fear was that they would soon become superior. We will also be exploring the reasons why both the United States and the Soviet Union developed military alliances. NATO was formed by the United States and her allies in 1949. 6 years later, in 1955, the Soviet Union and Eastern European neighbours formed the Warsaw Pact. By 1955, it seemed that the world had been divided into two well-armed and hostile camps. The nuclear age started on the 16th of July 1945, just before the start of the Potsdam Conference. The Manhattan Project had succeeded in its aim of exploding the world's first nuclear device. Although it was meant to be top secret, Soviet spies had been keeping Stalin informed of progress since 1942. President Truman now chose to drop the remaining two bombs on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, resulting in nearly 150,000 deaths between them. The motives behind this are manifold. It could be argued its main use was to speed up the end of the war against Japan. Japan had refused to surrender, and only something as devastating as this could force them to do so. Others, though, argue that this was an anti-Russian approach. It would stop the Soviets from being able to expand in the Far East as they had done in Europe, and to send a warning to them that America are the only power in the world with nuclear weapons, and they're not afraid to use them. The following 4 years saw a rise of tension, particularly over issues in Europe. Although the Soviets had 6 million troops in Eastern Europe, America could balance that with its nuclear monopoly. When Stalin threatened Berlin in 1948, the Americans could retaliate by airlifting supplies in, but also by sending their nuclear bombers to Britain as a clear warning to the Soviet Union. Although the Berlin Crisis was resolved peacefully in 1949, it didn't mark an end to the Cold War. Indeed, the divisions seemed more secure than ever. Germany was divided into a German Democratic Republic in the east and a Federal Republic of Germany in the west, and the Western powers sought to make their position even more strong by uniting together in a North Atlantic Treaty. The creation of NATO occurred in April 1949. The terms of the NATO Treaty ensured that the United States would maintain a presence in Western Europe. It gave Americans bases from which they could launch a strike against the Soviet Union. All NATO members had to maintain a capacity to resist armed attack, and an attack on one NATO member would be seen as an attack on all of them, and all of them would have to act together in a collective capacity. NATO made the Western European powers like Britain feel much more secure. But to the Soviet Union, it was seen as a means of dividing the world into two armed camps. Also, in 1949, the Soviets ended America's nuclear monopoly. The Soviet A-bomb was a propaganda triumph for Stalin and changed the world strategic system altogether. If the Russians also had the A-bomb and superior numbers of conventional forces, then that gave them the upper hand and the strength within the Cold War. And America needed to respond. In 1950, Truman got the National Security Council to produce a report. This later becomes known as NSC 68. This report identifies the key foreign policy concerns of the United States and how it should deal with those concerns. NSC 68 saw the world divided, a bipolar world in which two superpowers with differing ideologies were competing against each other. The report blamed the Soviet Union for seeking to dominate the continents of Europe and Asia, and argued that the United States needed an active and vigorous foreign and defense policy to respond to this challenge. It made the recommendation that America should do all that it could to ensure that non-communist regimes were viable alternatives to communism. This, in many respects, was an extension of the Truman Doctrine of 1947. It also recommended a strong build-up of both conventional and nuclear weapons. Following
following the start of the Korean War and what was seen as increasing communist expansion, the Americans undertook to make a much more significant contribution towards their nuclear defense. In 1951, the Strategic Air Command under General Curtis LeMay was established. This gave the US Air Force the capacity to drop bombs on numerous targets within the Soviet Union. Funding was also increased for the development of the hydrogen bomb. It was successfully exploded first in November 1952. The bomb itself was the size of a small building, but the world had now entered the thermonuclear age. The Soviet H-bomb came less than 12 months later. This was a major blow to American prestige. By March 1954, Americans had developed H-bombs which were small enough to be delivered by bomber aircraft. The Soviets again were able to catch up, and by September 54, they had likewise.
This was much quicker than the US expected. The loss of the nuclear monopoly hurt the Americans badly. They also believed that they were losing in terms of the delivery systems. Nikita Khrushchev, the new leader of the Soviet Union following the death of Stalin, was keen to present the USSR as the most advanced of the superpowers in the terms of technology. In 1955-56, the Americans were convinced that there was a bomber gap. The Soviets had more bombers than the USA had. This was as the result of dodgy intelligence. Essentially, the bombers that were counted flew round and round again and were counted more than once.
Both superpowers had invested massively in nuclear technology. The costs were astronomical, but both sides felt they needed to keep up in this ever-increasing arms race. By 1955, many Americans were convinced that the Soviet Union had the advantage in the arms race, but the reality was very different. The Americans had over 2,000 nuclear warheads. The Soviets had less than 450. American politicians were easily persuaded of the need to maintain defense spending by an increasingly anxious general public. The weather in the Cold War was about to change. With the death of Stalin in March 1953, all of a sudden there seemed hope of fresh shoots of international cooperation. Stalin's death facilitated the end of the war in Korea and greater efforts being made towards cooperation between East and West. By 1955, Nikita Khrushchev had emerged as the new ruler of the Soviet Union, a very different personality from that of his predecessor, and quickly sought to build bridges, first of all with Yugoslavia and Marshal Tito, and then with the West. He agreed to the neutrality of Austria, he sought to limit arms expenditure, and he was willing to negotiate face-to-face with the West at summit meetings. Khrushchev summed up his position as one of peaceful coexistence. Capitalism and communism don't need to be in some eternal struggle, and that they could actually collaborate and cooperate on some factors, even though they had different political systems. With Khrushchev's speech condemning Stalin at the 20th Congress of the Communist Party, it seemed that Khrushchev would seek to distance himself from the excesses of the communist past. That meant greater emphasis on consumer goods and human rights within the Soviet Union, and this was translated to other parts of the Eastern Bloc. There were limits, though, to how much freedom that Khrushchev was willing to concede. He still firmly believed that the Soviet Union needed its buffer zone in Eastern Europe, and although he could allow some small freedoms, such as greater ones for East Germany, he still wanted to maintain the Red Army's presence in those buffer states. When West Germany became a fully-fledged military power again and could join NATO in 1955, Khrushchev used this as the pretext for cementing the relationship, the military relationship, between the states of Eastern Europe. They met together in Warsaw and created their own pact. This Warsaw Pact presented an alliance very similar to NATO in how all the signatories would seek to support each other should there be an attack in Europe, and all would work together to ensure they maintained high levels of arms. Although in the terms of the treaty it talks of peace and arms reduction, the reality was it created a Soviet-dominated military bloc in Eastern Europe. All communist countries in Eastern Europe other than Yugoslavia became signatories. So, even though it seemed that Khrushchev was working towards greater peace and understanding, there was still, fundamentally, a military divide between East and West. Khrushchev's willingness to give greater freedoms was put severely to the test over the next couple of years, as events in Hungary in 1956 will testify. By 1955, then, there was a growing sense of stalemate in the Cold War. Although both sides recognised the other's right to existence, there was no real resolution of the great armed, nuclear-armed struggle which existed between them. Both sides began to stockpile more and more devastating weapons, and they were developing the means to deliver them effectively. The end of the American nuclear monopoly, and the continual advances made by Soviet technology, meant that the United States was paranoid about exactly how far the Soviet Union could go in challenging America's dominance. In reality, the USA was still well ahead in terms of nuclear technology, but the perception was that the Soviet Union was a formidable and equal foe. Both superpowers had formed strong military alliances in order to safeguard their positions. For the Americans, containment was their priority. Any talk of rollback of communism was merely posturing. For the Soviet Union, they had entered a new and difficult era in which they needed to cement their authority in the communist world, but at the same time seek to improve the quality of life for those who lived within it. This would present significant challenges for Khrushchev over the next decade. Goodbye, and good luck.